Minnesota Supreme Court Justice David Strauss went before the Senate Judiciary Committee for a confirmation hearing. President Trump nominated Strauss for a vacancy on the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals. The nomination stalled when Minnesota Senator Al Franken opposed that confirmation. If Strauss is confirmed, his seat on the state Supreme Court would be filled by DFL Governor Mark Dayton. Now, NPR News reporter Brian Baxt has been covering this. He's at the Capitol here. He's been following the hearing all morning. Brian, what can you tell us about what happened? I don't know if it's still going on, but what has happened in this hearing so far?
It is still going on. In fact, Justice Strauss and another gentleman who's up for a Court of Appeals seat in the South are on this panel together. So they're kind of fielding questions from senators, often tag team, and ask similar or the same questions. In this case, as you mentioned, Justice Strauss was nominated back in May, but his nomination had been held up for some time because Senator Franken had resisted this hearing. Last week, the Judiciary Committee chairman said that they would move ahead with this regardless of Senator Franken's objections. So now it's a matter of sussing out where he stands on judicial philosophy. He's explaining where he came down in particular cases and why. And he's being asked all kinds of questions about his past, you know, whether he's tried cases before as a lawyer, before a judge or jury, which he said he hadn't. But he did mention that he has overseen or been part of at least 700 cases as a member of the Minnesota Supreme Court, and as well as deciding whether thousands of other cases would be heard by that court. And some Republican senators say that was important because this is an appeals panel he's working, he would be joining, and not necessarily a trial court. Mm-hmm. So the experience of being an appeals judge was more important to them.
And we did hear from the nominee. I'm going to play a little bit of audio from the hearing. Again, this is just from this morning. The chair of the Judiciary Committee is Chuck Grassley, a Republican from Iowa. So the chair gets to go first in questioning. Here's just a little bit from Grassley, and then you'll hear David Strauss.
In your 7 years there on that Supreme Court, you've participated in over 750 decisions. Of those, my research says you've dissented in approximately 50 cases. Over 20% of those dissents were joined by at least what other people have characterized as liberal justices. You've also joined separate opinions by several liberal justices on multiple occasions. It seems to me you haven't voted consistently with justices appointed by either Republicans or Democrats. And how did it turn out that way?
That's correct, Chairman Grassley. My guiding principle is I take each case on its own. I read the briefs. I listen to the oral argument carefully that the parties give. And I try to figure out what the right answer is. I try to figure out what result the law compels. And I apply that law to the facts in a given case. And sometimes I end up agreeing with Republican-appointed justices. Sometimes I end up agreeing with Democratic-appointed justices. But in all cases, I use my best judgment, and I try to figure out what the law compels. And in fact, one of my colleagues who is known as liberal, Justice Anderson, I know that Senator Klobuchar mentioned Justice Page this morning, mentioned that one of the reasons why he's been so supportive of my nomination is because I'm objective and open-minded, and I take each case as it comes.
Brian, what else did we hear from Judge Strauss here in the questioning? Obviously, when a Democrat then would be up to ask questions, they may be a little more prodding, but you certainly hear a lot from David Strauss in these hearings.
Absolutely. You know, he was asked by a senator from Rhode Island about where he would come down in cases dealing with religious beliefs and religious freedom. And he said, my oath is to the Constitution, not necessarily my own religion. So he was trying to lay down that marker. Senator Franken, who, of course, we mentioned had held up this nomination for some time, asked Justice Strauss about his time clerking for U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who's seen as one of the more conservative U.S. Supreme Court justices in modern times. And he was also asked about how he's written on various legal blogs about cases that have come down and whether they reflect his views or just his analysis of the law. So he's had to do some explaining there. One North Carolina Senator Tom Tillis made a very interesting observation in his line of questioning. He compared the writings he's seen from Justice Strauss to those of now Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch. And the reason that was noteworthy to me is because Justice Strauss is already on this list of names that President Trump has put out of people he might turn to if there is another U.S. Supreme Court nomination, a vacancy that comes up. It's interesting as well that Justice Strauss is in his early 40s, and that's important because a lot of the Trump nominees are younger because the hope is that they will stay on for some time and they will help transform the judiciary to a more conservative viewpoint among those who are supporting these nominations moving forward. So he could be there for years if he doesn't get elevated, as I mentioned previously.
And the vote, will there be a vote today, do we know, Brian, that would move it to the full Senate?
It's unclear if they will vote today. There's another panel of judges that will come before the Judiciary Committee shortly, so this committee has a lot of work to do. It's unclear as to whether they're going to do it all at once or if they'll come back at a business meeting later on and do that.
Brian Bax covering this for us here at the Minnesota Capitol. Thanks so much. We'll hear more from you during All Things Considered and at NPRnews.org. Brian, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome, Tom.
Turning now to Ted Sampsell Jones, who's a professor at Mitchell Hamlin School of Law. Ted, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate you being a part of the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
We just had someone I know you know, Bill McGovern, on, who was part of a group of U of M law professors who said, hey, I think he would be a good fit for the judiciary, for the federal bench there, even though ideologically we are very different. I know that you know David Strauss as well, and I think you've talked to him a little bit during this process. What has that been like? I'm just curious to go inside as much as we can on the process of how someone even becomes a judge.
Well, I mean, I think it's a difficult process personally, being thrust into the public eye and also being the subject of attacks, obviously, when you're nominated for a very important position like this. It's not super easy for Justice Strauss or his family or any judge in that position to handle, but he's been doing well, and I think he's obviously very excited to finally get in front of the Judiciary Committee today.
How does he fit into the conservative vision for the federal bench?
You know, I think he's definitely a conservative judge. He's certainly more conservative than I am, and he's more conservative than the kind of judge I would appoint if I were president. But he's also a very fair judge and very much within the mainstream of American legal thought.
What do his rulings, and we heard Chuck Grassley, the senator from Iowa, allude to this a little bit, what do his rulings on the current court, the Minnesota Supreme Court, suggest or reveal about his judicial philosophy? You're going to look through his opinions and try to glean something. Is there anything we can glean?
Yeah, it's a complicated thing because he's been on the court now for, most of a decade. He's been on hundreds of cases. And there's no question that when you're on an appeals court and you're ruling as part of a panel, part of what you're doing is trying to build consensus and come to agreements on what to say in any given case with the other justices on the court. So you can't look at any given case and say, sort of this is him versus this is someone else. But, having said that as a caveat, I think, the rulings show that he's a conservative. He's very much a textualist. I think the main area where he's really had influence on the Minnesota Supreme Court is in the way that they approach questions of statutory interpretation. And I think his cases don't show someone who's consistently on the sort of right side or consistently on the left side, but someone who is trying to be driven by a judicial philosophy that is, focused on textualism, especially when it comes to statutory questions.
Talk more about that, about what influence a justice has when sitting on a bench like that, that we don't necessarily pick up on in the public, right? We may read the dissent or the opinion and glean something from that, but you're talking about that atmosphere in the room, the effect that one justice might have on the rest of the justice. I mean, I presume every justice has that effect. Talk more about that. I mean, I think that's an interesting component to how benches work.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting component, and it's something that the public doesn't often see, and even the lawyers don't often see. But what they have to do after every case is, they have an oral argument where all at Minnesota Supreme Court, all seven of them are there, and then they go back into a room and they have to work out some consensus, and then they start exchanging drafts. And so you have to, if you're writing for the majority, say you have to get at least three other justices to agree with you, and they're going to suggest changes, and there's things they won't agree with. So in every case, you have to, if you're writing for the majority, you have to convince other people to come along with you. And that means a lot of compromise between the justices. And I think then over time, you know, if you're trying to influence the court over time, it's really a matter of developing a good rapport with your colleagues and trying to push some consistent principles across a lot of cases that you can eventually write into law.
Ted Samsel-Jones is a professor at Mitchell Hamlin School of Law. And we're talking here about David Strauss and his nomination, which the hearing is going on right now for his nomination to become a federal judge on the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. Talk about that court, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. As Brian Bax, my colleague, noted, it's an appeals court. What would come to that court that might be different than, say, what the Minnesota Supreme Court rules on?
So the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals is it's quite a conservative court. It's been one of the most conservative federal circuits for most of the last generation. You know, what they deal with questions that arise in federal cases. So that means federal criminal cases instead of state criminal cases, which the Minnesota Supreme Court hears, and more kind of major, you know, larger high stakes civil litigation that tends to end up in federal court rather than state court.
So, for example, I think the circuit that is based in D.C. is known for getting a lot of cases related to laws that Congress passes, right? Is there something about the Eighth Circuit that draws a certain kind of case?
Not necessarily. So, yeah, the D.C. circuit gets a lot of cases dealing with administrative law and the executive branch, since that's sort of all headquartered in D.C. You know, the Ninth Circuit, which includes California, tends to get lots of immigration cases, for example. The Eighth Circuit, kind of, you know, running from Minnesota down the middle of the country, doesn't have anything in particular that comes to it. It just gets kind of the usual mix of federal cases, so federal crimes, and then, you know, large federal civil lawsuits.
You know, as we know here, Justice Strauss, yes, we talked about what Al Franken did as senator with this blue slip. He was trying to stop this nomination from going through, and that practice has apparently changed now with this exact case. So David Strauss, if nothing else, gets a little bit in the history books for this blue slip process, and we can suss that out later. But Justice Strauss was also, when Donald Trump was running for president, he put out 11 names that said, these are the people I would pick from to be on the U.S. Supreme Court. And Neil Gorsuch was one of them and has been appointed. Is there any sense, Ted, about whether David Strauss was in the mix for that Gorsuch vacancy, seriously?
You know, I don't know. I don't get the sense that he really ended up on kind of the short list of final people who was considered and interviewed by the president. You know, it's possible that he would be in the future. He is, as you've said, he's quite young. If he does get appointed here, he'll be, you know, on the federal appeals bench in his early 40s. So that sort of automatically makes you a potential Supreme Court candidate. But it's very hard to predict. And no, I think at the end of the day, he was not super close to getting there with the Gorsuch seat.
And if this happens and he is approved, this would give Governor Dayton another Supreme Court appointment. That would be his fifth appointment here on the Minnesota Supreme Court. What does that say about Dayton's influence on the state Supreme Court? I don't follow the nominations to the state Supreme Court as closely, so I'm wondering what this says about Dayton's legacy.
Yeah, Governor Dayton has had a very large influence on the Minnesota Supreme Court, given the number of picks he's had. And yes, this would be kind of an unexpected. I mean, because the Minnesota Supreme Court has mandatory retirement at age 70, you can sort of predict in advance how many slots each governor will get. This would give him kind of an extra unexpected pick. He's had a very big influence, and you know what Governor Dayton has really focused on is adding diversity to the Minnesota Supreme Court, and he's focused on judicial experience and also prosecutorial experience. So, if his path is any guide, he would appoint someone in that same mold.
Ted Samsel-Jones, a professor at Mitchell Hamlin School of Law. Thanks so much for your thoughts and your insights. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and have a great day.